You're listening to the After Hours Podcast. My name's Justin. I'll be joined on this pod by Eric and Giorgio. And in this pod, we'll be having a conversation about this past week's sermon and thinking about how that sermon applies to our lives as we seek to be transformed by God's grace into faithful servants of all. Thanks for being here.
Welcome back to the After Hours Podcast. I'm Justin. I'm here with Giorgio today. We're talking about...
Envy.
Let's go.
I know you're envious about the fact that we're talking about this right now.
You wish you could be here. You're wishing for our demise. Yeah, so what you think there, G?
It's really interesting when it comes to the topic of envy because my Enneagram 4, the Achilles heel of that is envy. And I don't experience envy in the same way. And so for years, I've had to like take a look at what level of envy I actually have because I was trusting that folks who struggle with this deal with it in a different way. Or the when it's an easily named envy, I like that's not my struggle. A discontentment and a wishing that I was in their shoes. I don't actually care about the demise. Like I don't typically go that route, but whether it's honor or whether it's reward or whether it's the effort they put into something for success or that is the sneakier part for me. And so I've thought about envy for a good long while now. And I thought you did a great job. And I was very thankful in the sermon about it. I was surprised that if the Enneagram does some semblance of categorizing personality patterns and which I do think it does, that, you know, the primary one for someone in my category is envy, because mine doesn't manifest in the way of like I don't really get excited about someone going down. You know what I mean? Like I don't experience myself going, I want that new car either that person just got, but I've kind of, experienced the deeper side of things. And I thought you got at that. And I think the passage is such an interesting passage. It's just, there's just so much going on there with the fact that the earliest workers were the most offended, and you don't really get the middle crowd, you know? And obviously, it's about the Jews. Jews coming to the Jews, and you know, and all that they have suffered at that point. And it's obviously about that new people are coming into the kingdom. But I thought that the way you
latecomers,
the way you oriented towards, I think it was gratitude, curiosity, and mutuality, was spot on. On how we deal with when we have the evil eye. So my question for you was, is God fair?
It depends what you think of fairness.
We haven't talked about this beforehand, just in case y'all are wondering.
So, I think, you know, there's the thing about fairness and equality, and that those are two different kind of concepts. And I didn't have time to get into this in the sermon, but the equality is where someone is lifted up to the same status or same level as someone else. I think the illustration is you're got three people on watching a baseball game.
Right.
And they're appearing over the fence and they're all on the same block, but they can't all see over the fence. And so equality is you add a block to the ones that are shorter that can't see over the fence.
Right.
But in its essence, it ain't fair.
Right.
But it ain't fair that the shortest one, even with help, can't see over the fence, and the tallest one doesn't need any help to see over the fence. That isn't a fair thing. Right. But it can be made equal.
Right.
Right. So
that all can see.
So that all can see.
Right.
And I mean, honestly, if you're reading this particular passage from the angle we chose to take it, then you would say that doesn't seem fair. Like, I worked all day.
No, it's.
And yet, God is saying something about how he views the world, that his grace is towards, you know, all of us in a sense, and that grace doesn't operate on fairness.
Right. So in some ways he's not fair, but he is just.
He is just.
So yeah, because that's the, you we agreed on this.
Mm-hmm.
You should be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was more generous to somebody else,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean that our deal was a bad deal.
Right.
You know, it was like, it's completely just.
Yeah.
So
I think that's the hard part of this for us. And Melissa wrote a pretty good devotional this morning,
mm-hmm,
where she talked about, like, she referenced something I talked about in the sermon, that normally we struggle with envy with people in kind of our caste or, you know, our level. We don't really have envy necessarily for those in a different stratosphere than us, except for with God. And she made the point that in the garden, Eve had envy for God. Like, and so at one level you could say, well, yeah, because we're created in God's image, there's a connection there. For sure. But at another level, he's God and we're not.
Right. We're not
creator creature distinctions here. He's in a total other class. Like,
right.
Like the prophet would say, like, there he is God and there is no other. And yet, like, at the core, our sin, first sin, is born out of some level of envy. And isn't that interesting? That we would be envious to be like God.
Right.
Why am I not like God? And yet, man, we know that's true.
Oh, totally.
Why can't I see the future like God can? Why can't, I mean, in ministry, we struggle with why can't we do the works in helping someone else like God can?
Even good things.
Good things.
Right, good things. Good things. Like, well, why can't I, you know?
Why don't I have that power to heal somebody, help somebody to the fullest extent, like God can. And why can't I, like, know good from evil, like God can?
Right.
You know, these things are our envy of God.
Yeah. I love it. I read that this morning too, and amazing. So the pattern is always the same, you said. Envy begins with comparison. Comparison leads to resentment. Resentment leads to hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And hostility leads to exile. So I just wanted you to riff on that a little bit,
mm-hmm,
that envy begins with comparison. And you have the side eye, like you talked about, the like you're most in danger of a wreck when you're looking in your side view mirrors or maybe your rear view mirror. So comparison's a real deal.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny, at least for me, when I think about comparison, is like at the different stages of your life, you have different levels of envy and comparison that you might deal with. I think as a younger man, I certainly would say that my envy outward was more towards people who had things that I didn't have, and sometimes that was possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Probably often it could have been possessions or perhaps like advantages,
mm-hmm,
family money.
Right, totally. Trust fund.
Yeah, trust fund, yeah, yeah. Or even just like the ability for your family to help you out in specific ways. Or like when I was in college, you know, I had to figure out how to go to college and how to do all the stuff to get to college.
It wasn't a 529 hanging out no, for you. No, it wasn't. It was a 529. Funded by the grandparents. Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like, and then it was, I had to take out max loans.
Right.
And so I remember thinking about friends that I moved with. I also had to work all, you know, worked all the way through college.
Absolutely.
And so I remember thinking about my friends who didn't have those burdens. And I certainly had envy towards that reality. As I've gotten older, I still can struggle with the trust fund piece as I think about getting older and going, man, I wish I had,
right,
you know, something in the
my
bank.
My retirement was clear. Right.
But more of my envy is like for youth and the vigor of youth, the body that works and responds.
And knees, you don't have to worry about your knees.
You don't have to worry about knees or recovery or calories or those things.
Totally.
That you know, or somebody who has a better metabolism than I do.
Right.
So it feels different. I think in a culture that worships youth too, like that is fed to us, that when you start to get up in age, like what value do you have? Now, certainly there's a sense of security that I have in who I am. But like if in my baser moments, I think that that's a reality is like, oh yeah, man, I'm not getting younger. Like it's a Toby Heath song. I'm good as I once was, as I ever was, but I'm not that good most of the time.
Right.
You know, I messed that line up.
I'm good once as I've ever been. That's the phrase.
So like we struggle with different things. It's usually in our cast, and that comparison, where does it lead to resentment?
Yeah.
Like that's the question is like, when do you become resentful? And I think the more you are gazing at what you don't have, the less grateful you are for what you do have, the more you're grateful in a backwards sort of way what others have, like you're lusting after what others have, the more resentful you become.
Yeah,
and there's all sorts of stories we have about this, like where people grow resentful. And
that's the Amadeus story, the Mozart story, and the Chariots of Fire story. Mm-hmm. I just got back from my time with my guys. We have a large group for a cohort, 12. Six of them have PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time I'm like, man, I wish I would have taken those 7 years out and gotten a PhD.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're a very smart and intelligent person.
Thank you.
And so like to be, and often like in a lot of rooms, if you walked into them, you would be the smartest guy in the room.
Right. Just not when I go to my cohort.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not even close. My and you know, like one was going to do we're leaving, everybody's scrambling because of the weather. And, you know, one's going to do a poetry reading in Nashville. One is going to, you know, like all, you know, one is an artist, and one is a, you know, like we just have really talented human beings in the room. And over the 26 years we've been doing this, it has moved from what I should be, or I'm jealous of them, envious of them, to, oh my gosh, they get to go do this. Mm-hmm. And it's not always there. Don't get me wrong. But even like, cause we bless each other at the end. So someone speaks, the person after them gives them their blessing. And there was a time in which I was like, oh, I got to gear up. I get my A game on, so I do a proper blessing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And now I'm like just relish in the blessings that are given to my brothers and friends. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel weird about just giving a blessing that was from me. There is something about age that does help with this, because your ambitions shift.
That's right.
It doesn't mean envy goes away. It just means your ambitions shift toward maybe even more specific things. But and I'm not, when I say ambition, I don't mean bad ambition. I just mean the things you long for, the things you want to be a part of. So that does help. Mm-hmm. We're already starting to tease ourselves about, like, this is kind of like our old man cohort now. And we're like excited about grandkids and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And versus we were going to try to change the world. But early on in our 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. we had strategies for it. Mm-hmm. And now we're like, I get to love my kids. This is awesome. And there's, it shifts. So I do think there's something about that that's right.
Yeah, I think I didn't deal with this in the sermon, but there is a piece to this. Like in our book club, we read Miroslav Volf's book, The Cost of Ambition. And essentially he's making this point, is like, there is a goodness to ambition, just straight. Where ambition goes south is once we start to compare.
Yeah.
And that's when our ambition gets sideways, gets off track, and is costly to us, to others, to our world. And like Wolf paints that picture, like how our ambitions have been costly in our relationships, how it's been costly in our economics, our nation, our environment, like all the different ways that our ambition, because of comparison. Because
that's where it turns to hostility.
That's where it turns to hostility.
And then you're like, that's when you're rejoicing over someone's failure, or you are actively undercutting someone's good ambition, good or even bad ambition. Mm-hmm. But you're like, I'm going to do something to shift to this.
And you see that like in all the different categories of your life, like whatever places you have identity. So that could be as a follower of Jesus, where you end up being envious. And I want to talk a little bit about this difference between envy and admiration, because there is a difference. But where you're envious of somebody's relationship with God, you're envious of their relationship with their spouse, you're envious of their relationship with their kids or their whole family unit as a whole, you're envious in your job, whatever your vocational calling is, you're envious with your friends, both people who have friends in a different way you have friends, and your actual friends and the things and the ways they're animated in their life. Like wherever you take a deep sense of your own sense of self, those become very easy seedbeds for your envy.
Yeah.
And that resentment and hostility, that the hostility results from the resentment, is that it causes breakdown in relationship.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we see the hostility at work. And that leads to exile, where you are, the hostility has broken the relationship. And it's because of your envy or their envy of you. And the relationship is no more.
Well, and this is where you brought up, like, close friends or spouses even, that this can happen in the most intimate and relationships you would not think envy happens. But it does all the time.
Right. I mean, like, if you think about what do you fight with your spouse over? Like, typically it has some level of envy to it. Like, you know, one's doing the dishes and one's not. And, one's active in the chat with the children and one's not. One is, you know, wants to has a high desire for sex, and one has a low desire for sex. And there's this envy that is present in those inequalities.
Right.
And then you don't know what to do with it.
Right.
And it does lead to resentment and hostility, and it can break that relationship.
Yeah. And it does exiling, even if it's not a full exile. Mm-hmm. It does create that separation.
Yeah.
No matter what. I remember coming home after Carver was born, and I had some obligations. I took paternity leave. I did the things, and I came home and after paternity leave, and Amanda said, because she's been like, you know, nurturing our child, our first born child, and she said to us, she said to me, it doesn't feel like you want to be with us. And yeah. I remember going, wait, how did the us not be us? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I was like, what did I get left out of the us? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, and what she was experiencing and I was experiencing at the same time was I wish I could be in your shoes and she wished I could be in, she wished I could, she could be in my shoes.
Right.
Because as a pastor, you go to lunch and you know, that's part of your job. And, right. and she was like, I just want to be with adults. And I was like, I just want to be with Carver, you know what I mean? Like right. I was like, and we were having this tension
right.
of envy. I mean, it was like whiplash when I was no longer part of the us of what we had been us for 6 years before we had Carver. You know? I was like, how did I not get to be part of that pronoun? Right. I don't know. That's just real. And that exacerbated is yeah. like, do you get invited to that meeting at work?
Right.
That is making that decision or not.
Right.
And then what does faithfulness look like? What does gratitude look like? Right. What does all that stuff look like?
Yeah. I mean, I know like in the church, some of the ways that what ways we can see this is like someone feels left out on the outside.
Yeah.
Whether that's church as a whole or leadership or just friend groups that happen within the church. And when they feel left out, they go seeking our guidance or our help, thinking that we can help, like, bring them on the inside and make them friends with people. And we really can't do that. That's not really our role. We can be empathetic towards that reality, and we can shepherd someone with the gospel into that, like their security and their union with Jesus and what that means for them. But we can't make people be friends.
No.
Or connected deeper, and we can't make them necessarily get invited to every small gathering of friends that happens within a congregation. And yet, that's a very real feeling people feel in the church. And they're like, why am I never invited to this thing?
Right.
Or why don't I have deep friendships here?
Right.
What's either wrong with me or what's wrong with them?
Right.
Like, those are real realities of life within our body.
And just in case you're wondering, everybody, you probably think that like Eric, Justin, and I are at the center of all things, and therefore we have power and access to all things. But we feel the same things you do.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on which group you're looking at in our church, or whether we're the inside or outside, right. and what our envy is doing when we're not on the we don't have full access to all things mm-hmm. whenever we want at our own whim.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
So this is C.S. Lewis's The Inner Circle,
mm-hmm.
Little article. And it's just like, it's just an onion.
Mm-hmm.
It, whatever inner circle, you got to go deeper. And then there's nothing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really exist.
Right.
So I think that's a really good thing. All right, let's talk about like the gratitude, curiosity, and mutuality, because this is the other banger I thought you had was that the kingdom and grace is not about ranking or comparison. It's not measured or rationed, and it's not earned. The generosity of God is not a limited resource.
Hmm.
And so then that flips the entire script of envy. And you quoted some dude about gratitude and curiosity, and I think you added mutuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really good. 'Cause you brought the Romans 12,
rejoice.
Yeah, rejoice yeah. with those, rejoice. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this is sounds simple, but it is an absolutely radical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that very compelling. So talk a little bit about the kingdom and the economy of grace,
right.
and then we can talk about gratitude, curiosity, and mutuality.
Yeah. So if God is, if all goodness to any of God's creatures flows out of God's grace from the sense of like common grace, that the sun shines, the rain shines on all, like there's a common grace element that just in being a creative being that we receive from God, that then as creatures then who sin and who rebel and, you know, are alienated from God by our own doing, then any action or activity towards us in goodness is an act of grace.
Right.
And it's all free. It's not something we can earn or merit any more grace. So that basically sets the economy that right. Anything we receive as creatures who have rebelled against the king as an act of grace towards us. And this gets back into your idea of fairness, you know, how does that flow? And part of envy, this is what envy does, is it does move us into, tries to move us into God's seat.
Right.
To where we don't understand why this person gets to have all this or do all this or is free from this.
Right.
And that's probably a bigger one, is like when we're suffering, like the envy hits us hard. Like, why am I suffering? Why do I have this affliction that someone else doesn't have? Now, lots of times the way that works, like for us as Christians, is that there are some really good things that we end up seeing through suffering that we can't see any other way. And you would never like wish that upon yourself or someone else. But when you go through it and you're on the other side, or even sometimes in the middle of it, like, oh, I'm really thankful for this.
Right.
It's taught me how much I need God. It's taught me how to be more generous. Like when you are with, like my daughter Blakely was in Kenya this last week. And one of the things that she talked to us about on the aftermath of the trip is just how these people are poor. Like she's like, you know, America poor and Kenya poor are two different things. And she's like, but man, they are so hospitable and so willing to share what they have to strangers. Like they didn't know us. Certainly we were there to do clinics and sports medicine stuff, but like they were so kind and generous to us, even with the little that they have. So there is something about that reality that when you're in it, like, or when you experience it from somebody who's given to you out of their poverty, you realize something real, like about the world and God and his grace. So
that, and what gratitude looks like.
Yeah, and what gratitude looks like. And so, but like, we put ourselves in the position of God because we're looking at ourselves and going, man, this does not seem fair. And yet grace doesn't operate on that principle. And again, it's our point of view, our frame of reference. What are we looking at that helps us maybe get after grace a little bit? And that can be hard, especially like when we live in a world where we have friends and followers and we follow people that it looks on, it's meant to look this way.
Right. It's meant curated.
To, yeah, it's curated for us to envy. Why are you an influencer? Because you have influence and it's curated to show your reasons why you have influence. So the person who travels and stays at hotels for maybe for free. So because they have followers and they can promote the hotel and it looks like, man, they're having a great life staying in a suite and doing all the things while they're in this, you know, hotel and city, man, that looks great. I want to do that vacation for my whole life. Amazing. But it's a curated existence that we don't know this person. We don't know where they come from, and yet we find ourselves like in this place of comparing our lives to their lives. And that makes it really challenging both to understand God's grace and to understand fairness and to understand our what we've been called to do in the world that is different. It makes us not understand poverty and being poor and kind of distance ourselves from even that reality even more. So we don't want to experience lack, because lack would mean I'm not keeping up or I'm falling behind. Anyway, it's a challenging thing, but the kingdom of grace is that God's grace is free and it's not based on a ranking and any of its grace. And can you get more grace? That's the question.
Yeah. So answer it.
Well, like, obviously we could say, man, I want more of God's grace to be active in my life. I can also say, like, God's favor, unmerited favor, is a one big act.
Right. He can't love you more than...
Yeah. And that is guaranteed by us. How do we know? Well, we're told to, okay, well, look to Jesus. He who did not spare his own son, how will he not freely give you all things? Well, what does that mean? Does that mean I get all things? You've gotten all things in Jesus. That's the grace.
Right.
And the freely that he's given you all things is grace. And the way God divvies that, the finer accoutrements of that grace out, that's out of our pay grade. It's out of our purview.
Right.
It's beyond our need of understanding. So that's the economy of grace.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and if you take the redemptive historical thing Jesus is doing in the parable, it's these Gentiles are going to come to God, and they were not in the desert. You know what I mean? They didn't the Jewish story and the pride and sense of not necessarily earning, maybe earning, but the sense of like, this is our story.
Yep.
And then you're going to let these hooligans who, you know, have been pork eaters and rapscallions the whole time, you're going to let them in the kingdom too?
Right.
Like, and so like training our hearts towards whenever we see out of our suffering into what happened in our suffering and God's kindness to us in the middle of our suffering, to, oh my gosh, someone else gets to taste the kindness of God in Christ, and like be on the edge of our seats to celebrate that. That's the fight against envy. That's the focus on grace that is just like, who cares, man? You got a taste of Jesus. Like, this is, heck yeah, man. I don't care whatever you did, whatever happened. This is also the No Hard Feelings Avid Brothers song. Is like, you know what? When it's all said and done, here's how I want to end. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the sense of man, I screwed everything up. You screwed everything up.
Yeah.
Whenever it happens, we're just giddy it happens.
Yeah.
And that there's a, like, even saying those words, like, brings my anxiety down, brings my, like, you know what? It's all right.
Yeah. And I think that's the key part that I teased out a little bit in the second sermon, but didn't have time for in this first, is this idea of mutuality. And this relates to admiration. Like, our call to our mutual life together, like, envy keeps us from mutuality. Like, our desire to have something that someone else has and then to resent and end hostile towards someone and exile from somebody because of those things, we're called to something else. We're called to mutuality. And mutuality, I think, by its necessity, requires what Paul says in Romans, to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, that the actual practice of what you just described, of saying these words, this is good.
Yeah.
Reminding yourself that this is good. And I said that in the sermon, like, one of the practices I try to do is whenever anybody's experiencing something that's got you know, happiness and joy and delight behind it. I want to name it.
Yeah.
And say to that person, I'm so glad
yeah.
that you got to do that.
Let me give you an example, because my wife is probably the most grateful human being I know. Mm. And she works in a industry that
right.
the temptation for envy
right.
is as high as it gets. She jokes sometimes that I couldn't afford myself mm-hmm. because I know exactly what's supposed to happen in my house. I know as an interior designer and oftentimes working with high-end clients.
Right.
She's like, I know what's supposed to go here.
Right.
We don't have $8,000 to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean? But my wife is the most grateful human being I know. And this was a seminary story. My buddy and who are still now long friends, the Thompsons, he was working at at Sunnyside Mission. The restoration hardware warehouse in St. Louis was flooded. And so they couldn't sell any of that stuff. The entire warehouse had to be distributed. Mm. Some of it was damaged, some of it wasn't. So they went to the Sunnyside warehouse, the Sunnyside Mission, for folks who were struggling with the homelessness and all that other stuff and job training, all that other stuff. And they donated everything. They went to a bunch of nonprofits and just started donating stuff. Well, there still was so much in that warehouse that they said, well, any employees, you can come in and pick anything you want. Mm-hmm. So during seminary, which Jess can tell you is a little tight financially, mm-hmm. our best friends got their entire house done in restoration hardware
right.
because they just scooped it up.
Right.
And because where we were in seminary, the entire apartment complex was seminarians. And the evil eye of envy was ripe.
Right.
And a little bit in me, but not so much. But Amanda was giddy for them. Amanda, my wife, who is a designer, who couldn't afford any of that stuff, was just giddy for Courtney and Greg in the middle of it. And it's still one of like this formative things for me that she was just so excited for them. You can go to their house right now and some of that furniture 29 years later is still in their house. Mm-hmm. And she's still giddy about it. I think they just got rid of the sleigh bed because it was just like it was getting run down and all that stuff. But you know, like this incredible furniture. And there's something about like just the mutuality of getting excited about a blessing that somebody else gets that actually makes your own heart sing as theirs is singing. It also frees them to enjoy the gift because in seminary, everybody's like doing their tribal comparisons and all the other things like that. And you're like, no, it's just great. Mm-hmm. It's just great. So there's a spiritual discipline of going, oh my gosh, you landed that deal. Oh my gosh, you got that raise. Oh my gosh, you get to live there now. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is such a kindness from God. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have all the other questions about greed that we have to deal with,
right.
but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about we're talking about envy. And I want to celebrate that I wasn't even actually here this Sunday, so I listened to it online, but I was so thankful for the mutuality part, the radical nature of rejoicing with those who rejoice, and how countercultural and how much it actually forms you who are rejoicing with those who are rejoicing and weeping with those who weep. And so I think that, and you had mentioned that this is a discipline I'm trying to create, but yeah, I think that it's not just counting your blessings, it's counting other people's blessings as the kindness of God and just go, heck yeah.
And you get to participate in that both as cheerleader and as witness.
Yeah. You bear witness to
that. You bear witness to that, like celebratory nature of what the kingdom is like. And I think where admiration comes into this is like, it is good to admire others who have different gifts of the Spirit. Different orientations to people and life. And it is good to admire in the sense of like, when I'm around you, like I see that and I want that in the right sort of way.
Right.
I would like for my life to be more that. And like we get this gift with the pastors groups that we're in, that is one of the things we get to participate in with them. Is I was thinking, you know, before the sermon, like who do I really like feel nothing but celebration? And then when I'm around them, I admire them. And, you know, the five pastors that I meet with and that I talk to on a regular basis, you know, those are guys that I want, like, their beautiful gifts, that their orientations towards the things of the world and their families. And I see that in them and I'm like, I'm admiring that.
Right.
And I want more, I want God's grace to be in my life so that those things are manifested in my life too. Not at a detriment to them, only of an expansion of them. And right. That's the mutuality. Like it's both celebrating and then there's also the part of like actually being someone who weeps with those who experience loss that I think if we're envious, we can't do that because we're celebrating it.
Right, right. There's right. a little like, well, it's
even if we never admit that, it's a tinge of like mm-hmm. delight. No, we are actually devastated at their losses. And that is the mutuality that we want to be as a church, as the people of God, and in our circles that we occupy. We hope for that. The last piece of this is curiosity, like, which is really important because I think with all of these different vices, we can approach it with shame mm-hmm. and condemnation because we see them as vices. Or we can approach them with some level of curiosity right. of, okay, what is this, you know, what is this pointing me towards?
Right.
Like, what is this revealing?
Yeah. Where is the Lord going to meet me in here in this like angst or this envy?
That yeah. So when we have it, like it, I really do think it helps us see what our idols are. It sees what we're building our identities on apart from Jesus. Mm-hmm. And it is like helping us to think about Salieri and Harold Abrams.
Right, right.
Like, oh yeah, my identity is being built on something beyond God. And of course, we're children of Keller, Georgie and I. Keller was so good at this, of pointing out like how our idols reveal what we're like building our lives on.
Right.
And that's what envy is. It is a signpost. To if we can be curious, my identity is being found in something beyond Jesus and his grace. And that's why I'm mad that he got paid, you know, for only working an hour.
Right.
And I got my agreed upon rate
right.
for working 10.
And you got to work. Because there's people out there
right.
not being able
to. Right.
Right, right. Like just the whole system. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean, that's something I didn't mention, but that's true. Like,
this you is know, the
if
Home
you're
Depot
a day laborer.
Home Depot parking lot. Yeah. And you're like, they picked you.
Yeah, they picked you and you got to work.
And I'm not saying that's a just system. We're not saying that at all. I'm just saying, but the person who gets to get picked to work is glad to be able to work, mm-hmm. you know? So just so you know, in closing, or maybe in closing, I don't know. It depends on what Justin wants to do. But I realized I'm writing this grant for a Lilly Foundation grant that Justin had won in the 2019. And actually, you guys at Redeemer, if you remember, we actually applied for that very same grant. And I was like, dang it, you beat me out of that grant because he won it. And then I hadn't even listened to the sermon yet. And he goes, he said something about envy. And I was like, I'm not envious. So just in case you know, it's actually live with actual pastors. No. You're actual two pastors in the world. And I was like, dang, maybe I am envious. I don't see myself that way, but maybe I need to be curious about my envy.
Yeah, man.
So anyway, I'm glad that you got to do that road trip. He actually sent me his grant to help me prepare mine. I'm glad you got to do that road trip.
Yeah, man.
I'm genuinely glad you got to do that. And so,
I don't know how I got it, but I did.
You did. You, yeah. That's right. That's right. You, whether it's 6th hour, 11th hour, 9th hour, it doesn't matter. Because His grace is His grace is true for all of us.
So. It was based on a Ferris Bueller quote.
It was totally based on Ferris Bueller.
Like, so. You know, it's like Lily. You think, oh yeah, these are like probably highly educated folks making decisions about that, and they appreciated Ferris Bueller, at some level.
That's right.
To build a theme off of Ferris Bueller.
Anyway, well, I just so you know, we're all in this together. We're fighting off the green evil eye, So stay curious about when that envy comes. Consider the mutuality of celebration and burden bearing, and most of all, realize that God has been gracious to you.
Yeah, man.
In Christ Jesus.
Amen. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, next vice, we'll talk about gluttony, my least favorite of the 7 deadly sins.